Kill them.
Kill them both. We're missing Antiques Roadshow.
We're interrupting this program to bring you the most exciting piece of news that's happened since the war.
Like magic, an invisible chain of sound once more circles the planet.
Anything can happen in the next hour.
Who else has electricity streaming from his eyeballs and from his fingers?
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
You said I was an enemy of society? All right, I'll show you what I think of your society.
You're talking about cause and effect in the outside world. We're not living in the outside world.
You know, it's a pity you weren't born a girl.
Yes, I've always envied you that.
Welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast.
Paleo Cinema Podcast looks at movies between 1895 and 1990. We cover all mainstream and genre films, books, TV, and whatever else Terry gets obsessed about. The email address is cultguru@gmail.com. That's cultguru@gmail.com. The new voicemail number is 206-350-5440. Or you can leave messages on Skype at Paleo Cinema. All lowercase and no dash. This podcast may include swearing and adult content. So if you hear anything you don't understand, just fucking Google it.
Hello and welcome to Paleo Cinema Podcast 61. My name's Terry Frost, and this time around we are looking at the career of an Australian actor, Rodney Sturt Taylor. But before we get into the career of Rod Taylor, I'll do the news and what I've been listening to and watching and get into it. So, how is everybody? Going really well here. My job has become permanent. My new job that I started about 6 or 7 months ago has become permanent, which I'm happy about. And I've also got a brand new gig. Now, a few people who are on Facebook and Twitter will know about it, but basically once a week, around 8:45 at night my time, I'm talking for 15 minutes with a guy called Ivor Cole on ABC Radio in Darwin in the Northern Territory. We're talking film noir and old movies in general for 15 minutes once a week on the national broadcaster, which is, it's blown me away doing this. It's something that I didn't expect to do. And I do really have to thank Shanna Marinko, one of the Bazura Project guys, for suggesting me for the role. He did it with the previous presenter. And there was a change of direction when they changed the presenter to Ivor Cole. And Ivor wanted to take it somewhere else. And Shannon suggested me. And yep, so every week I am talking about film on ABC Radio in Darwin. Now, Darwin, in case you don't know, is right at the top of the Northern Territory. It's the kind of capital of Crocodile Dundee territory, if that helps anybody understand it. It's got about 250,000 people there, and it's very, very isolated in a sense. So I've done three movies for them so far. I did The Siege of Pinchcup, which I've already talked about in this podcast. I did Detour, the film noir, the 1945 film noir directed by Edgar G. Ulmer. I did a movie that was suggested by Ivor, which I have got to recommend to you guys. The American and Australian title for it are Clean Slate. It's a 1982 movie directed by Bertrand Tavernier, and the French name for it is Coup de Torchon. It stars Stéphane Audran's in it, Isabelle Huppert, and the main starring role is Philippe Noiret in a very different role. So I really enjoyed seeing that film and reviewing it for the radio. So yeah, Paleo Cinema Empire is expanding and I'm doing new things. Unfortunately, the recordings of that aren't available. They are owned by the ABC, so I can't do anything with it. The first one, I did post a link to it on the website, paleo-cinema.blogspot.com. But that was recorded by somebody else beside myself and I just posted the link, so I've got a bit of distance from that one, but I want to keep my dealings with the ABC very professional. I am enjoying doing this really a hell of a lot. It's a crazy buzz, and I get incredibly wide before and after I do it, and really enjoying it. It's not a large thing, but it's a very different thing for me. And I find it interesting that gutter snipe like myself, who left school at 15, can do something like this on professional radio. So yeah, fantastic stuff. Really love the joy of sharing that love of cinema in a slightly different context with a somewhat different audience. And I can only thank everybody involved, the ABC, Ivor, and Shannon, for steering me in a direction that I find incredibly fulfilling. So that's pretty much the news. I'll talk about the movies I've been watching. Let's see. I did see an interesting one yesterday. I've got VLC Media Player, which is my default media player for everything video on my computer, now has an iPhone app. So what I did was I downloaded the iPhone app, and it means that it doesn't matter which video format a movie is in, I can watch it on my iPhone when I'm not doing anything else. And the first movie that I fully watched on that was a late 50s western called Hell in a Texas Town, starring Sterling Hayden. Now, there's nobody else famous in it. It's got a micro budget. The music's, I think they had about four musicians to do the soundtrack music for this film. It's set in a Texas town, obviously. And a big landowner who's doing a land grab, played by Sebastian Cabot, of all people, arranges for one of the recalcitrant farmers who won't give up his land to be killed by a gunman. Now, the farmer's son, whose name is Hansen, played by Sterling Hayden, is a whaler, and he comes into town, and basically there is a showdown at the end of the film with a gunfighter versus a whaling harpooner with a fucking great harpoon. Now, it's a small film, and it tends to be a bit of a character study. Maybe they saw Sterling Hayden, Johnny Guitar, and were trying to get some of the magic on that. But the character study is more of the guy playing the gunslinger than of the George Hansen character played by Sterling Hayden. But it does end in a very kind of cool-looking climax, with a harpooner going up against a guy with a six gun. And yeah, it's worth seeing. It's nothing big. It's not wonderful, but it is slightly different. They, just by the fact that they changed the context of a gunfight. So check that one out. Just see what else I've been watching. I can never remember when comes the time to record the podcast. Now, that's a great character flaw, and I'm going to have to go back, I think, to writing them down in a book. By the way, if you're getting some interference in the background at the moment, it isn't shit audio quality. It's raining heavily outside. There's a rainstorm coming through, and it's probably settling in for a number of hours. So I apologize if you hear a slight hiss in the background. It's meteorological, not electronic. So anyway, I'll just check out the films I've been seeing, apart from the ones that I've mentioned that I talked about with Ivor for the ABC. I do have to recommend a BBC documentary series. There are three documentaries in it that have only just been shown on the BBC. If you're in England, you'll probably still see them on the BBC iViewer thing. But they're the history of horror films with Mark Gatiss, from people might know him from League of Gentlemen and a number of other things. He's been in a Doctor Who episode or two. And he played Mycroft in the recent BBC Sherlock TV series, which he also co-wrote. Recommend that you see these three because they're fantastic documentaries. The first one covers the early years of horror cinema, the Frankenstein, all those sort of things, and the Universal ones. It doesn't go too deeply into the silent film era. Second one's pretty much about Hammer and Amicus and all of those ones, and then they then drift into the more modern horror films. He talks to George Romero and a number of other people about that, and it's a well put together personal view of Mark Gatiss's love of horror cinema. So Sal and I watched that over two nights and just really enjoyed it. It's well put together. They interview a lot of people who have only just now died, people like Roy Ward Baker, the director, and a number of other people. Gloria Stewart gets interviewed as well. So do check that out if it happens locally, or you can find a copy, because it's our kind of stuff, if you know what I mean. I did catch up with a film that you might not have expected me to watch, which was 1963 Summer Holiday, starring Cliff Richard and the Shadows. It's a very light, frothy kind of pop musical from the early 60s, but I did enjoy it. The people, basically these guys who work in a bus depot, outfit a bus as a part of a plan by London Buses to do bus tours of Europe. and they go on a summer holiday in a bus. They meet some girls in a car that's broken down, and they all travel on their way to Greece. And it's a lot of fun. It's very light and bubbly, and beautiful colour in it. And apart from the fact that Cliff Richard is a total null character, I really enjoyed it. I liked seeing the clothing. I liked looking at the Arc de Triomphe in the 1960s. I remember just trying to cross the road to get to the Arc de Triomphe is a major nightmare on that roundabout. And it's a little bit of fun. It's frothy. It's not meant to be anything more than just a piece of froth. But I'd heard some things about it, so I decided to give it a go. And I didn't find it unenjoyable, which is really odd for me because I tend to steer away from cutie stuff. But this one particularly worked really well. Now, there's a few other things that I watched as well. Oh, yeah, I saw Mad Love, the 1935 film starring Peter Lorre, where he plays Dr. Gogol, pretty much a mad scientist who encounters a concert pianist and whose hands are damaged, and he transplants the hands of a killer onto the concert pianist while he's lusting after the concert pianist's wife. And basically, he's a total sick bastard. He's got a shaved head. He's disguised himself as somebody else in a very freaky way. I won't do too many spoilers on that, but if you haven't seen Mad Love, definitely do so. I know that Vince and Nick over at the B-Movie Cast have done this film, and you can go and listen to that and then watch the film, or vice versa, whichever you prefer. But there's a definite recommendation. Now, I haven't seen as many films as I normally do over the past 3 weeks, because last weekend I flew up to Sydney and visited family. My mother lives up there. One of my sisters lives up there with her fiance and their baby, and I caught up with family and did all the groovy things that one does when you visit your hometown again. I went to all my usual haunts, and one of the things I did do is I took my mother over to Manly across the other side of the harbour. It's about a 45-minute ferry ride across to Manly, and we had a groovy day, and it was lovely and sunny, and there were girls walking into the pub where we had lunch wearing very skimpy bikinis, and it was thoroughly groovy. And then on the way back, we got hit with an enormous thunderstorm. Lightning, rain, thunder. And one of the things I wanted to do was take a photo of Pinchgut, Fort Denison, in the middle of Sydney Harbour. I'd only just recorded my first ABC radio thing about the siege of Pinchgut, so I thought I'd do a photo of it. And I got soaked to the bloody skin standing out on the deck to get a photo of Pinchgut in the rain. I got the photo. I did get the photo, and I got a number of the other photos of the weather closing in on us. But it was really groovy to see the place where Aldo Ray went totally nuts and threatened to blow up Sydney and eventually died in a very much the same way as James Cagney in White Heat, standing on top of something and screaming at people. So I did do that, and every time I go to Sydney, I kind of think about the films that were filmed in Sydney that I really like, The Man from Hong Kong, and of course The Siege of Pinchgut, and a number of others, less than I would have liked. I would have loved to have seen a lot more films done in Sydney, which kind of segues into the fact that there's a new TV channel in Australia, a new digital TV channel called 7Mate, which of course is for guys. And one of the things they're showing is an old 1960s Australian TV series called Riptide, which stars an American actor, because of course nobody in Australia would allow Australians to star in their own TV series at that time. A guy called Ty Harden, who you might remember played a Bronco in the TV in the 60s, and then later on went to be quite famous in various militia movements in the 1990s. But the lovely thing about this is I get to see lots of places that I know as they were in 1968. And there are any number of old Australian character actors and up-and-coming actors that starred in episodes of Riptide. It's basically about a guy who owns a charter boat company and gets into adventures on the waterways around just north of Sydney Harbour. And Jack Thompson, famous Australian actor, was in an episode of that. We've got Norman Yam, Henry Zepps. And people overseas might not know these people, but they're all Australian actors, and they're... It's really interesting to see them in early roles, and it's interesting to see the old cars that people had and the way the locations looked. And I really am enjoying that kind of nostalgia for the way things were when I was a child. Maybe it's a factor of getting older or something like that. Maybe just that I liked the comparison and the contrast between the way people lived in those days and the way people live now. But either way, I am really enjoying watching Riptide. So I'm going to take a break now, and then I'll start talking about the career of Rodney Sturt Taylor. And I'll basically what I'll be doing is hen-picking out the movies I think you should see from his career and just kind of go into his history a little bit. This year, Rod celebrated his 80th birthday, so it's a timely time to do it. And any guy who can get a role in a Quentin Tarantino film at the age of 79 is not doing badly at all. So back soon, and we'll get on with Rod Taylor.
The night and frighten bad little girls like you. Beware, better have a care. I'm going to follow you everywhere. I crawl through the ceiling and the wall and call on bad little girls like you. I'll torture you and haunt you. I've got you where I want you, a victim of my dark and dirty plot. And at the slightest whim, I'll tear you limb from limb. In other words, I'll put you on the spot. Ooh, I'm the boogeyman, the terrible, horrible boogeyman. I come in the middle of the night and frighten bad little girls like you.
The Boogeyman by Todd Rollins and his orchestra from the Bioshock 2 soundtrack. As I mentioned in the last podcast, the Bioshock soundtracks have a lot of retro music on it. And given it's Halloween, I thought I'd play that one for you. So let me just play in some intro music to the Rod Taylor thing, and then I'll get stuck into it. Thank you. That's some of the music from the soundtrack of The Time Machine, which is probably Rod Taylor's most well-known film. It's still a bit of a biographical piece now, and get stuck into the films of his that I like. Rodney Sturt Taylor was born on the 11th of January 1930 in Lidcombe, in a suburb of Sydney, New South Wales. That's about maybe 10 or 15 k from where I was born, so a lot of affinity there. He was the only child of William Sturt Taylor, who was a steel construction contractor and a commercial artist, and his mother's maiden name was Mona Thompson, and she wrote plays and children's books. His middle name comes from his great-great-granduncle, Charles Sturt, who was one of the British explorers who opened up the inland of Australia beyond Sydney in the 1800s. Basically, Rod Taylor saw Laurence Olivier and Vivian Leigh toured Australia with the old Vic Theatre, doing plays, bringing culture to the colonies and all that sort of thing. Along with them, one of the other actors in their tour was a guy called Peter Finch, of course, another well-known Australian actor. And Rod Taylor saw them performing all these plays for the old Vic and decided that he was going to be an actor. Now, the way to start in Australia in the 1950s and being an actor, this is pre-television. This is very, very early 1950s, and TV didn't come until 1956, is to do radio plays. Now, the way they did radio plays in Australia was there were a whole bunch of radio networks that basically laced the country together. And they'd bring in scripts for radio series from the US mostly. So you get people like Leonard Teal, an Australian actor who later went on to have a long and successful career in television, playing Superman. So Leonard Teal would play Superman with a pseudo-American accent, and all the scripts would be done by local actors. And that's why they have they used to have a term called Woolloomooloo Yank, which was Australian actors faking American accents so they could do these scripts that were brought over for the radio. Now, Rod Taylor became famous as a radio actor in the early 1950s. He was Australia's Tarzan in the radio adaptations of Edgar Rice Burroughs' Tarzan stories. And unlike a lot of the other people who were quite successful as being radio actors, Rod Taylor also had the looks to be a film actor. He got his first opportunity to do that in 1953, when Chips Rafferty, a well-known Australian actor who had a film career as well, he'd done movies like Eureka Stockade and 40,000 Horsemen and The Overlanders for British companies that were filming certain stories in Australia. And he'd also been to England and done some acting over there. He wanted to create a Australian film industry, and there was nothing really post-war that was happening in that regard. So he got some money together, went up to the Barrier Reef and filmed a movie called King of the Coral Sea, starring Chips Rafferty himself. Charles Budd Tingwell, another well-known Australian actor, was in it. And also a guy called Rodney Taylor, playing an offsider to Chips Rafferty's character, a guy called Jack Gennaro. Now, at the time, Rod Taylor was a commercial artist as well as a radio actor. But before he became a radio actor, he was a commercial artist. He used to do backdrops and things for large department stores and do any kind of incidental painting work, artistic painting work and graphic design that they needed for the shops. So this was his first film role. A couple of years later, he went to the States, and his career over the next 10 years really took off. Now, Rod Taylor was kind of in very much in the 50s mold of actors. He was a barrel-chested, muscular, good-looking guy. He had a handsome Irish mug, and I was talking last night with Ivor Cole, the guy I do the radio with, and he's not very impressed with Rod Taylor's chops as an actor, and I kind of disagree with that. There are a number of things I've seen him in that I really did see some good nuanced acting from him. In 1954, before he went overseas, he did Long John Silver here in Australia, which starred Robert Newton, amongst others. He did The Virgin Queen in England with Flora Robeson. His first American film was a film called Hell on Frisco Bay in 1955, and oddly enough, in the same year, he did a movie called Top Gun, which predates The Birth, let alone the career of Tom Cruise. He was in The Rack in 1956, World Without End, a science fiction movie set on Mars in 1956 as well. And he got a contract with MGM, which gave him well over 10 years of interesting films to do. The first one he did for MGM was Giant. He was in Giant, of course, starring Rock Hudson and James Dean and Elizabeth Taylor. So his movie career in the US really took off at a fairly high rate. He was in a movie that I've got a lot of time for, starring my comedy Clifton Elizabeth Taylor, called Raintree County in 1957. It's a great film for spotting people in it. Lee Marvin's in it, and DeForest Kelly from Star Trek's in it, and a number of other things. And one of the things I'd recommend if you're going to see Raintree County is read the book. It's quite long, but it's a book I really enjoyed by a guy called Ross Lockridge Jr. If you can find a copy of it, and it's not always easy to find, I do recommend it. He did Separate Tables in 1958 with David Niven, amongst other people. I think Burt Lancaster was in that as well. Just let me check. Yep, he was. I've got to find a copy of that because I saw it years ago when I was quite young, and it did impress me, but I want to check that out again. From between 1958 and the 1970s, he did some great films. And then, of course, in the 1960s, George Powell hired him to play the time traveller in The Time Machine, which is probably his best and most interesting role. Well, it's not necessarily his most interesting, but his best known role. And the interesting thing that I find, and this is because I'm a trivia buff to the max, the only two people that have played the time traveller really in The Time Machine were both Australians, Guy Pearce in the somewhat misadventurous remake, and Rod Taylor. So there you go. Australians make the best time travellers. I'm just going to play a little bit of audio from The Time Machine's trailer just to get you in the mood for it.
Why is it that we usually ignore the fourth dimension? You see, we can move in the other three. As the doctor said, up, down, forwards, backwards, sideways. But when it comes to time, we are prisoners.
There are a lot of things I like about The Time Machine. I like the fact that, given the technologies people had at the time, they really tried to sell the story. The remake, of course, has much better special effects, but the naivety of the special effects in the film really work, and the passion that Rod Taylor brings to his acting in this one is pretty impressive. I do like these scenes between him and his friend Philby, played by Alan Young. The gentleness of the relationship between these two men and the great regard that the characters hold each other in is really kind of more than the relationship between Wiener and the time traveller. I find that relationship between the two men to be kind of the emotional core of that film. I'm not going to talk much more about that because I've got to talk about it next week for the radio. But it's definitely one of the highlights of Rod Taylor's career. And the 1960s were a great decade for him as far as movies were concerned. A lot of his very best films come out of that decade. Now, let's see what else he's done. So 1960, we had The Time Machine, of course. He did a sword and sandal epic called Colossus and the Amazon Queen in 1960 as well. I'm not sure where that came from. In 61, he did one of the main voices for Disney's 101 Dalmatians, a film that I don't hold in high regard. But in 62, he did an Italian kind of pirate swashbuckling film where he played Francis Drake, a movie called Seven Seas to Calais. I've only been able to find a really bad copy of that, but the movie does turn up on TCM now and then here in Australia, and I want to get a good copy of it then. It's got another Australian actor in it whose career is a lot lesser than Rod Taylor's, a guy called Keith Michelle, so they're both playing it. And it also has Terence Hill from all those Italian westerns in it, which makes it interesting for that ring. And in 63, of course, he did The Birds for Hitchcock, and Hitchcock being who Hitchcock was. Rod Taylor had a lot of trouble with a number of birds. He was pecked a number of times while doing some of those scenes in The Birds, and I don't think that, I think he looks back fondly upon it. I've seen interviews where he looks back fondly upon his experience there, but I still think, I get that sense that he still feels that Hitchcock was a bit of a bastard there. So, you know, not everybody gets to have a starring role in an Alfred Hitchcock film, and Rod Taylor was one of those. But in the same year, he did another film that I have a great fondness for and that his acting in is seriously underestimated. It's a movie called The VIPs. It was directed by Anthony Asquith from a Terence Rattigan script, and the ostensible stars of the film were Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor at a time when they were the big movie star couple in the world. The other actors in this film are fantastic. You've got Margaret Rutherford's in it. You got Rod Taylor, you got Orson Welles in it, you got Dennis Price and Richard Watterson, a number of other people in there, apart from Louis Jourdan's in there. And the bits that I like of it, I do like watching Burton and Taylor play together, and I love Margaret Rutherford playing a dotty aristocrat in the film. I believe she got an award nomination for doing so. But the heart of the film for me, and you tend to gravitate towards actors for whom you have a fondness, is Rod Taylor playing a mining magnate called Les Mangrum, who's going through some business hassles and needs to get a deal through urgently. And his secretary is played by Maggie Smith, who at the time was very attractive in an unusual way, and just the rapport between the two characters as they're kind of negotiating their way through this incredibly important deal that he has to do, and of course the romantic ending of that. I really like it. I think it's a beautifully nuanced piece of acting, and he's up against the best in the world at the time: Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, Maggie Smith, Margaret Rutherford, Orson Welles. He's in the same film as all of these people, and he holds his own in it. And I do like the scenes between him and Maggie Smith. They also worked again in a movie called Young Cassidy, which was partly directed by John Ford. He became ill, and it was then finished off, I believe, by Jack Cardiff. But I find that a lesser film. But I do have a fondness for Rod Taylor in the VIPs. And, it's just one of those competent and engaging bits of acting there. Now, 63, he also did a comedy, a romantic comedy, which is a lot of fun. I'll just play a little music from that comedy and then talk about why I find it such a joy to watch.
Sunday in New York. Rod Taylor is the eager Lothario.
That I changed my mind about us and my chances about five times, and the last time I would have bet my life on it.
Lucky you didn't, you'd have lost.
It's a film called Sunday in New York, and it was one of the first starring roles for Jane Fonda, and I really do enjoy the kind of romantic badinage between Rod Taylor and Jane Fonda in the film. It was directed by a guy called Peter Tewksbury, and the rest of the cast is pretty cool too. You've got Robert Culp in there, you've got Jim Backus in there, and Cliff Robertson's in there as well. It's one of those kind of light and breezy 1966 comedies, but the stars in it are so engaging, and the music's cool, and it's better and of less problematic than a lot of the other ones that I've seen from that era. And Jane Fonda is sexy and funny and cute in it, and Rod Taylor holds his own against her in that role. Cliff Robertson plays her brother, Robert Culp plays her fiance, and there's a kind of comedy of errors thing involved in the whole deal, and it's just a bit of a groovy little 1960s flick. It's not fantastic, but it's engaging and light and fun, and there are a lot of worse ways to spend an afternoon than grooving on that film. So I really do enjoy Rod Taylor in that role, and it shows his range too. I mean, he's done a whole bunch of action films, and later in the 60s he did more of them, but in this one he held his own in a very light romantic comedy. And if you haven't seen it, do check it out. It's weird. I do like a lot of his films, but I don't always think they're fantastic films. After Sunday in New York, in 1965, he did a very cool thriller with James Garner, a movie called 36 Hours.
Give me any American, and in 36 hours, I will give you back a traitor. The time, 6 days before D-Day. Major Jefferson Pike, U.S. intelligence, is briefed on the invasion. 2 hours later, Major Pike embarks on a crucial secret mission to Lisbon. In less than 24 hours, Major Pike will awaken here in what he thinks is a U.S. Army hospital. In 12 hours, he will age 6 years. In 36 hours, he will live the most bizarre spy adventure plot ever conceived.
How the hell did I get here?
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents 36 Hours. James Garner is Major Jefferson Pike. In 36 hours, he will betray a million men.
Gold was assigned to the British 30th Corps with the British 40th Noah, the British 50th making the landing. Juno was the Canadian 3rd, and Sword the British 3rd.
Academy Award winner Eva Marie Saint is Anna, trapped, desperate.
I know this is a strange thing for a man to ask his wife, but what's your name?
You look very hysterical.
You scream once, you find out how easy your neck will break. Now, tell me the date.
Rod Taylor is Gerber, the one man who could destroy Major Pike, the only man who could save him.
You know, of course, I'm going to have to turn you over to the bully boys.
I didn't think you were going to send me back to Lisbon.
Do you really believe this scheme of yours will succeed?
I'll stake my reputation on it.
Oh, you have staked more than your reputation, Doctor. Much more.
Oh, that's not a lie. I was at Auschwitz and Ravensbrück. That's why I'm here. That's why I agreed to do it.
They're giving you 36 hours. If by the end of that time you don't have the information, then the SS will take
over. I can do it in that time.
You don't know what sort of thing he has in mind for me, do you?
They all have their favorite techniques. You might start with something they've learned from the Russians. It seems to be in vogue at the moment. Very simple. No sleep.
Unless I get 8 hours, I'm just no good the next day.
See it from the beginning. Every second counts.
Rod Taylor plays an army doctor who is really a Nazi. And he's quite effective in it too. He kind of has a bleak fatalism in the way the character unfolds in the film. And it's a really good thriller. It's actually based on a story by Roald Dahl. And unfortunately, the film's in black and white. I could have seen it in colour. It would have been great. But obviously, MGM didn't want to put the money in to do colour prints of the film. And if you don't know the film and you get an opportunity to PVR it or something like that, do so. It's a good little thriller. Of course, the conceit of the plot has been used endless times since then, faking amnesia to get information out of an intelligent agent and telling them that it's years and years later. But Roald Dahl thought of it first. It was later used in an episode of the Prisoner TV series with Patrick McGill in the same plot line. But this is a good, solid thriller and worth checking out. Now, there's a film I haven't seen. He also did a couple of other films. Young Cassidy, of course, as I mentioned. The Liquidator, which was a kind of James Bond spy spoof based on John Gardner's Boyse Oakes novels, which also starred Trevor Howard, amongst other people. And yeah, it's not a bad little spy spoof. It's got a great big brassy Shirley Bassey theme song, which kind of grates a little bit, to be honest. It's not one of her best efforts. And again, it's light and silly and a bit of fun. He did The Glass Bottom Boat in 1966 with Doris Day, a romantic comedy, better forgotten. But in 1967, he did a couple of interesting films. The first one I haven't seen in a long time, and if anybody can steer me towards a copy of this film, I'd really like to. It's a movie called Hotel, and it's one of those grand hotel kind of things where rich guests come into a posh hotel and there are all sorts of dramas and personal life changes that go on and things like that. And Rod Taylor plays the manager of the hotel in the film, and it's quite cool, and and Michael Rennie's in it as well, I believe, playing a kind of exiled prince. Haven't seen it for a long time, but I'd love to see it again because there's a few good scenes that I recall from the film. where Rod Taylor is talking to the piano player singer in the hotel bar, played by Carmen McRae, a very fine jazz singer. So I want to check out the copy of that one at some stage, which unfortunately I haven't been able to procure. Even if it's a bad VHS copy, I'd love to see that film again. And then he did a Western in 1967 called Chucker, which also, I watched that today. It stars John Mills, Luciana Paluzzi's in it, Ernest Borgnine, and Ernest Borgnine and Rod Taylor have a fantastic fist fight in the film, which was really good. It's kind of a slow burn, this Western. It starts off pretty dull, but then it picks up. It does have severe budget limitations. I think Rod Taylor produced it himself. It was released by Paramount. And he plays kind of a gunslinger drifter who wanders into a fort that's under siege by Indians. The supporting cast is pretty good. James Whitmore's in it as well. And Michael Cole, who you might remember from the Mod Squad's in there as well, gets shot in the head by John Mills. So it's worth checking out. And in 1968, he did one of his other best films. Two of his other best films, sorry. The first one's also known as The Mercenaries, but it's called Dark of the Sun. And it's set in the Congo, and basically it's a bunch of mercenaries and international police kind of things who go up against a whole bunch of rebels and have to rescue some Europeans and a cargo of diamonds on a train. Very brutal action film, and it stars his co-star from The Time Machine as well, Yvette Mimieux's in it, Kenneth Moore's in it, and Jim Brown's in it. So it's a good, gritty action film. If you've seen Tears of the Sun, the Bruce Willis movie from about 10 years ago, there's a lot of similarities between the two films. But I do enjoy Dark of the Sun. It's a fine action film, and it really is gutsy, gory for the time, but really one of those forgotten gems of cinema that does turn up occasionally on cable here in Australia, I'm sure. I would love to have it on DVD. It's just a good, solid action film with a slight twist in the ending, which is very right, but interesting for a film of that vintage. And Rod Taylor is great in it, and him and Jim Brown have a good rapport as a couple of soldiers for hire who have a history together. And I'm not going to do too many spoilers on it, but well worth checking out. Now, I'm going to take another break now because my throat's giving out a little bit. And then I'll kind of go into the other films that he did. I'll start in 1968 with a movie called Nobody Runs Forever. And take us right up to Inglourious Basterds. Back after a break and a musical interlude.
Kind of a drag. Baby, don't love you. Kind of a drag when you know she's been untrue. Oh, listen, cause you want I gotta say. When you feel like you wanna cry. Oh, girl, even though you made me feel blue,
That, of course, was the Buckinghams with Kind of a Drag, one of my great memories from the 1960s. On with Rod Taylor's career. In 1968, he did a movie called Nobody Runs Forever, which was based on a novel by an Australian writer called John Cleary. It's about a Sydney cop, or an Australian cop, who is sent to London in the 1960s, of course, to arrest the Australian ambassador to the court of St. James for the murder of his wife many years ago. He does get involved in the politics and some terrorism and some other things there, and meets Camilla Spar, very sexy actress, and the ambassador is played by Christopher Plummer. It's a good little thriller, and it's nice to see him playing an Australian for a change too, which it's always appreciated with Australian actors. They can get that kind of international blur about them, where you sometimes they'll be playing Englishmen or sometimes they'll be playing Americans, and it's a little hard to nail them down on exactly who and what they are. So, 68. 1970, he did a couple of interesting films. Actually, three interesting films that I know of. Now, this is right at the end of his contract with MGM. They dropped a lot of people there, and Rod was getting slightly older and chunkier, and he never had a pretty mug, and his mug was... He was in his 40s then. And he had a slightly puffy Irish mug, and the kind of leading man roles that he had been playing became less and less. But this is kind of like the last hurrah of that. He did a movie based on one of my favourite book series, a movie called Darker Than Amber, directed by Robert Klaus, the guy who directed Enter the Dragon. Now, Darker Than Amber is based on the Travis McGee novels, one of the better ones, in fact, one of the early Travis McGee novels up to the point. It does take great liberties with the plot. Of course, it's a studio film and they always fuck things up in some way. But it does have a good cast. It's got Rod, of course, playing Travis McGee, who gets involved with a woman called Vanjie, played by Susie Kendall. The other people in the cast are great too. There's Theodore Bickel. There's a great big fist fight. Again, another Rod Taylor fist fight between Rod Taylor and one of the great people that I know the GGTMC guys love, William Smith. There's a great ding-dong battle between those two at the climax of the film. James Booth, a friend of Rod Taylor's, who was also in another movie with him in 1970 called The Man Who Had Power Over Women. And, it's a lost opportunity. Rod wasn't physically right for Travis McGee, who was tall, which Rod wasn't, and kind of leaner than he was. But he gives it a good effort there. It was, as I said, the end of his contract, and he was phasing into the character age spectrum of an actor's career. But if it's on again in TV, I'll definitely tape it and keep it, because I'm a kind of completist when it comes to John D. McDonald stuff. He also did Michelangelo Antonioni's kind of Poisoned Valentine to America, Zabriskie Point, in 1970. Which starred Dario Harpin and Mark Frechette. It's very much an artifact of its time. I kind of half watched Zabriskie Point a few years ago and really didn't get into it enough to see it all the way through, but I do want to get back and watch it again and give it a fair go. It's one of those kind of counterculture movies where Rod Taylor has a kind of secondary role as a businessman, and he was concerned at the time. It may even have had something to do with the end of his contract with MGM doing Zabriskie Point. But I really am going to have to see that film again. I really want to give it a fair go. But the first half of it was very disjointed. Nonetheless, I'll give it another go. And then he kind of phased into doing TV roles. He made a TV movie called Powder Kick, which turned into a TV series called Bearcats in 1971. He did a western called Train Robbers in 73, Trader Horn, Deadly Trackers in 73 as well, and started working overseas a bit. He did a couple of other TV series. He did The Oregon Trail in 1976. Did an Australian film called The Picture Show Man, which is about a guy who, played by John Millian, who basically had a travelling cinema. They'd go to tiny country towns in the early part of the 20th century and show movies in each one of the country towns and move through. And Rod Taylor played an alternative provider of these films, an American who came over to take over the industry. It was kind of paralleling the way America took over Australia's film industry at the time. But it's a nice small film with a kind of bucolic Australian feel about it. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's one that people remember fondly. Now, after that, his career kind of deteriorated. He did a lot of TV stuff, as I said. Nothing really memorable until he hit about 1998, where he did Welcome to Whoop Whoop, playing Big Daddy. It's a weird movie, Welcome to Whoop Whoop. I'm sure it's available on DVD. And it's an interesting flick. I love the bits where the kind of it's kind of microcosm of society in a weird way. I won't do any spoilers on it, but if you want to look up Welcome to Whoop Whoop in Wikipedia, you'll be able to get the gist of it. And he, again, for the first time in a number of years, plays an Australian and does it quite well. And he does a bit of tap dancing and enjoys the broad comedy of the role that he's playing. I know people who absolutely hate this film, but I don't think it's meant to be taken seriously. It's a silly film. It's a comedy. It's a little out of its time. It might have been one of those movies that played better if it had been made in the 1970s than in 1998. And it got totally vilified by the Australian press at the time. And, you know, his career's kind of diminished since then. He was heading into his 70s and 80s. Well, he's 80 now. But he did a TV movie called Core, in 2007, which was basically he was there because he'd been in The Birds, and this was about killer crows. It's nice to see him doing it. He's played the town doctor in that film, and I got a copy of it just because Rod Taylor was in it. But and then, of course, Quentin Tarantino gave him what I hope is not his last hurrah by getting him to do that little wry cameo of playing Winston Churchill in Inglourious Basterds. Lovely to see Rod just sitting there puffing on a cigar and grumping and just basically having a good time with it. I'm not sure, entirely sure why I have such a fondness for Rod Taylor. Maybe because when I was growing up as a kid, he was probably the only Australian actor that I could see in movies, because a lot of Hollywood films came out in the 60s, and Rod Taylor was the only Australian really starring in roles when I was a child, so I've got that kind of emotional attachment to his career. And it's a long one too. I mean, from 1953 to 2009, you can't really knock that for longevity. And, of course, it did have its ups and downs. I talked to Sal about the career of Rod Taylor, and what she remembers him from is a TV series called Outlaws in 1986, which was about a bunch of Western outlaws who time travel to modern times. It was a very short-lived TV series, but Sal really enjoyed it at the time. But and he did other things. He played Mr. Lavender in a TV series called Masquerade, which was a kind of spy TV show, which starred a much younger Kirstie Alley. And of course, in the 60s, in the late 50s and early 60s, he did Twilight Zone episodes. He did a TV series called Hong Kong, playing a journalist living in Hong Kong, an expatriate American journalist in Hong Kong. Unfortunately, it's very hard to find his TV series on DVD at the moment. But he did a number of episodic TVs shows. He did Playhouse 90s and General Electric Theatre. He did Walker, Texas Ranger, and like everybody else, he did Murder, She Wrote. But thing is that I think that Rod Taylor is underestimated as an actor. I don't think that his acting chops really project themselves the way that some other people do. I think when Rod Taylor does nuanced acting in his career, it's so naturalistic that it's hard to detect. I mean, tell me if you disagree, but I found that some of his acting in a number of his films, he portrayed anger really well and did fantastically well in the physicality of things. But he could do comedy, he could do drama, serious drama. He was very much an action film star of his time. And that's a nice range for any actors concerned. I mean, if you're a bad actor, you don't get those kind of opportunities. You don't work with people like Hitchcock. You don't work with people like John Ford. And Rod Taylor did both of those things. And so I haven't got too much else to say about his career. I do enjoy a number of his films. Now, I did get a voicemail in anticipation of this podcast from our good friend, Dr. Zom, just talking about Rod Taylor. Now, I'm going to play that, and then I'm going to play another mysterious Zom voicemail, and we'll wind up this puppy.
Paleo Cinema featuring host Terry Frost. This is Dr. Zom calling from work, so this is going to be short, and I'm sure to be real sweet. I know you're going to be talking about Rod Taylor. One of my favorite actors growing up. Very versatile. And what I mean by that is that for years, I did not even know he was from Australia. I always saw him in Westerns and movies like that, where he played an American. Anyway, three favorite Rod Taylor movies for me, and there's a bunch of them, but I'm just going to narrow it down to the three. One would be Dark of the Sun, because I'm a big mercenary movie fan. I put that right up there with The Wild Geese and Dogs of War as my favorite, I shouldn't say the best, but my favorite, personal favorite, movies about mercenaries in Africa and the Congo. His depiction of Bruce Curry was excellent. Also liked the guy who, of course, you talk about that movie, you have to talk about the chainsaw fight. Which was excellent, between him and the German dude who was based on the real-life character of Congo Mueller, who served with Mad Dog Mike Hoare in the Congo. Also, a lot of train stuff in that movie, which was excellent. A lot of gunplay. And let's see, what else? The second movie would be Darker Than Amber. Of course, this one, you can't mention that movie. You have to mention the big fight scene between Rod Taylor and William Smith and the legend that they actually beat the living shite out of each other. William Smith was in real life, a pretty damn huge, monstrous, and Hulk-like strong dude, and Rod Taylor went toe-to-toe with him, and they both ended up pretty beat up from it, but at least that's how the legend goes, and I am not going to argue with the legend, because it looks like they really went at it pretty good. And the third one was a movie called Chaka, which was a Western made back in the day, and I loved that movie. I loved Rod Taylor's coat. I loved Rod Taylor's hat, his boots. His whole costume was spot on, cool as hell. And his battle with Ernest Borgnine was awesome. And I just want to say that I think the guy himself was the kind of guy who had just a ton of charisma. And he was the kind of guy that he wasn't a pretty boy, but he was the kind of guy, he was rugged. The women would loved him because he had rugged good looks, and the men wanted to be like him or wanted to be his friend or whatever. You know, that sounds kind of gay or homoerotic saying that, but it's the truth. Yeah, the truth. So anyway, I am at work, so this feedback is a bit toned down for Dr. Zom's standards, but I don't want to get fired. So, Dr. Zom, that's about all I have to say for now. So anybody out there that hasn't checked out Darker Than Amber, Dark of the Sun, or Chaka, give it a try. And, oh, one last one was when he was, it's a personal fave, was he wasn't the star of it, but he was one of the stars, and he was in The Train Robbers with Anne Margaret and John Wayne and Ben Johnson. Excellent movie, excellent Western. That's about it for now. I gotta do some work. Zom.
Thank you, Zom. I can't disagree with anything you've said there. That kind of charisma and likability was one of the strengths of Rod Taylor. And I do like the films that you mentioned. I hope I've added to that, so maybe you can find some Rod Taylor films that you haven't seen that you might like as well. Please, everybody who can, give me feedback. I haven't been getting a lot of feedback, and I don't know whether it's down to the quality of what I'm producing or people forget. I mean, real life does interfere with the things that we have a passion about, and nobody knows that better than me on a Friday night when I'm talking on the radio. But definitely do the voicemail. Send an email to cultguru, KULTGURU at gmail.com. Let me know what you'd like to see next. I might not always do it, but I do like the feedback. And if I don't get exactly what you'd like me to do, at least it gives me a direction in which to go. Now, I don't know what I'm doing next. I will find stuff to do next, as I always do. But thank you for everybody that's passed on the good wishes about the new gig on Facebook and Twitter and everything like that. It is nice to be appreciated, and it is nice to be able to share good things that happen with people, and I really love that about social media. So everybody out there who's podcasting, I know Cine Coltani is back again with Ben and his new co-host, so that's good to see. I always like to know that there are other good podcasters in Melbourne. Of course, there's Erk Pod up in Sydney doing his own thing in a very different way than mine. There's the Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema guys and the B Movie Cast people and Mail Order Zombie. And just basically go to the paleo-cinema.blogspot.com. Down the left-hand side, you'll see some of the podcasts and some of the websites that I appreciate. I surely should update that and add other things to it, but please support other podcasters. It's an ecosystem that we're building here of movie buffs in particular, and it's nice to have a number of options to listen to people talking about films they're passionate about. And I love people who are passionate about things that I'm passionate about too. So that's about it for this time. It's time for me to go and actually do some real life stuff, like hanging out with Sal and Jack the Cat, and waiting for the rain to stop so we can do things. So I really enjoyed doing this one. I do like having the theme podcasts about a particular actor. We did the Warren Oates one a while back, as you might recall. And I like the focus that gives me and the opportunity to just sit on my ass and watch endless films, which I'm probably going to do anyway, but at least I can say I'm doing podcast research in future if I'm doing that. And if you'd like to see me talk or hear me talk about a particular actor, drop me a line or drop me a voicemail. I'll soon tell you if I don't like the actor or I don't think I can do it, but I do what chances are there's something out there that I can do and I would like to do and maybe I hadn't thought of. Anyway, that's about it. We've just hit the 1 hour mark, and I'll probably edit out a bit of waffle in there, so it'll hit just under 1 hour on this podcast. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for all the love and support. And keep watching movies and step out of your comfort zone. Check out things you wouldn't otherwise check out. And that's about it. I'll be back in a few weeks, 3 weeks. And in the meantime, if you are able to stream abc.net.au/Darwin, lowercase, D-A-R-W-I-N, at 9:45 Eastern Summer Daylight Saving Time Australian, you'll hear me talk about movies. And if not, sorry that you can't. I know that for the US it usually happens somewhere around 4 o'clock in the morning, which sucks, but I'll keep you guys updated on how that's going and what I'm talking about in that anyway. And the other thing I should tell you about that is I'm actually getting my own introductory music next time I do it. So there'll be intro music on the radio just for me talking about movies with Ivor Cole. And I'm inordinately buzzed by that. Anyway, that's about it. Got to go. Got to edit this puppy, upload it to the universe. Catch you later.
Teddy, Dr. Zom, calling from the United States of America. What? Dr. Zom calling from the United States of America. Teddy? Are you on the telly? This is Dr. Zom. Yes! Zom calling from the United States of America. Teddy? Teddy!